The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Not sure how many people knew this, but the Belmont was yesterday, and the Derby winner, Golden Tempo, won again. Welcome back. Sports Sunday here on The Fan. Zabe with you, at Zabe on Twitter. Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo, Metal Chris behind the board this afternoon. Golden Tempo once again closed with authority at the Belmont Stakes. This after skipping, of course, the Preakness. So it makes you wonder, could it have won the Triple Crown? I would say that Sherry DeVoe, who has made quite the name for herself, not just as a historical figure, being the first woman trainer to win the Kentucky Derby, but doing a great job of knowing her horse, this magnificent big brown machine, Golden Tempo, knowing the way to manage this horse, has produced two massive wins in the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown. That'd be the Belmont Stakes. Jose Ortiz rode 12 lengths off the lead, and once again, Golden Tempo surged from the back of the pack. What a horse. What a closer. Incredible. Okay, let's shift gears here. The World Cup is beginning this week. I have here in front of me, you can't see it because we don't have a camera connection. You're going to have to trust me on this, Metal Chris. I have the printout from FIFA.com of the match schedule and all the different sites for the games. There are 16 different sites. 6 in America. No, hold on. 12. Vancouver, Guadalajara, Mexico City, Monterrey, Toronto, and that's it. The rest are in the U.S. I have it right here. I think I got my head around and my mental arms around the World Cup. It also helps that every now and then, AI is quite helpful. I know we all decry AI.
Not this again.
Slop. I know. First of all, have you seen the AI slop ESPN is using during the NBA Finals on its bump outs to break? If not, I'll explain it. They're taking historical photographs of iconic NBA players in their moment of triumph during the NBA Finals. Whether it's hugging a teammate or with confetti falling around them or whatever. And they are running those photos through an AI image generator to then make them move. So they're animating still photographs from 10, 15, 20 plus years ago. The results have been not just underwhelming, they have been reviled by the public saying, what is this crap? The AI image of Tony Parker of the Spurs sitting in the middle of a pile of confetti with the trophy in his arms, holding up a number one finger designed to be a moving photograph, doesn't even look like Tony Parker. His face, you're like, that's not, who is that? They got a ton of crap for it after game one. ESPN, through a spokesman, said they would reevaluate using the technique and the policy going forward. But then in game two, they bumped out and they showed a picture of Steph Curry. And I start to lean in just a bit and I start to squint. And I'm like, that's not Steph Curry. What? I did post the photo on my Twitter feed, at Zabe, if you want to check it out. But no, every now and then AI is good because I simply typed in, and this would have taken me quite a while to figure out on my own or just by traditional Google searching and note-taking, but I typed in to Grok, quote, how did the World Cup format change from 2022 to 2026? And laid it all out. First of all, we went from 32 teams to 48. Biggest structural shift in decades, leading to more matches, revised group stage play, an extra knockout round, and a longer tournament. total matches. In 2022, there were 64. There's 40 more now to 104. Remember this when people say, it's great. What's wrong with more? Don't you want more? More is better. More is always good. Well, at some point, more is too much. Tournament length. In 2022, the World Cup was 29 days. This one's going to last 39 days until the final on July 18. Host city. 2022, single host city, Qatar. This year, we've got USA, Canada, Mexico, 16 different stadiums. Group stage. 2022, there were 8 groups of 4. Each team played 3 matches in their group. Top 2 from each group, 16 total, advanced to the round of 16, and then you started knocking teams out. In 2026, there's still 4 teams per group, but there's 4 more groups, so the groups go from 8 to 12. Each team still plays 3 matches. Getting through to the first knockout stage, which is the round of 32 now, not the round of 16, is going to be easier. It is believed that a single match win, or fixture win, as they call it, will get you out of the group stage. Knockout stage. Last time it was 16 teams, down to the quarters, down to the semis, down to the final. Winner had to play 7 matches total. This year, we're at 32, so it's 32 to 16, quarters, semis, finals, and the winner will now play 1 more match. That's 8 total. The expansion aims to include more nations, but has drawn some criticism for potentially diluting the quality of play, increasing fixture congestion, and by changing team strategies on how to advance. FIFA had adjusted the original plan, which was briefly considering 16 groups of 3, to the current 12-by-4 setup for fairness. It represents the largest one-time expansion in World Cup history since it grew to 32 teams in 1998. I'm not anti-expansion per se. I know the NCAA tournament did the same thing back in the early 80s, and it was universally good. But now that the NCAA has ballooned to 76, 64, 72, it's 70-something. It disgusts me even thinking about it. More is not always better. More, at some point, becomes too much. We'll see how this one plays and feels and looks for the first time, adding all these countries. And a lot of these countries, I mean, look, they're not really good soccer powers. They may still win a match or two because, hell, every match is 1-0, 2-1, or 0-0. So we shall see. Speaking of expansion, coming up, Ty Hildebrandt, co-host of the Solid Verbal College Football Podcast. There were hearings on Capitol Hill this week about the way college sports is going, super leagues, playoff expansion, and more. I'll deep dive with Ty on that next. It is Sports Sunday here on The Fan.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, joining us now from the Solid Verbal, the number one independent college football podcast. They've been doing it since 2008. Ty Hildebrandt joins us on the program. Ty, good afternoon. How are you?
Zabe, I'm doing well. Thank you. It's always a pleasure to get the text from you. I always feel like you. I am and among royalty.
Well, and you respond, and I appreciate that. There is actually, believe it or not, in June, a lot popping on the college football front when normally there wouldn't be. So let's get right into it. I played golf, Ty, with a longtime D1 athletic director this week. Now, he's a lower level guy, non-football power athletic director, but he's a bona fide AD. And I said, what did you think of the hearings on Capitol Hill the other day? And he said, I wish I could get those 3 hours of my life back, as it was so much BS. What did you think of the dog and pony show on Capitol Hill?
I thought it was a lot of BS, to be honest with you. I think your friend probably has the right train of thought with regard to it. Look, you're right. There is a lot going on. And not in the way that I think we as sports fans would prefer. It's a lot of off-field, administrative, congressional, legislative news that isn't the most fun to discuss. But look, there, Congress, without going into like the nitty-gritty of what Congress is trying to do, there's a bipartisan bill that is being discussed that would potentially address some of, I emphasize some of, the issues involved with the current governance model or lack thereof with college sports. You know, there are some decent ideas in that. I think the pathway for it to actually getting done is rather narrow, but that might be a topic for another day. When I say it's BS, I think what I have a little bit of trouble with, not that I don't believe Nick Saban has a role to play in this, I completely understand why people value what Nick Saban thinks about the state of college athletics, but Nick Saban is also a symbol of the old power structure in college football. He got out right as all this stuff was going to 1,000. Yeah. So I have a little bit of an issue with, though it is important to hear what Nick Saban thinks and his insights are valuable, I don't think the new age, the next governing model, if we ever agree to one, should be based solely on what Nick Saban thinks, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you think Saban is helping or hurting the cause from a public perception standpoint?
I think from a public perception standpoint, obviously it's a relative to where you are. You know, if you're an SEC country, if you're in Alabama, Nick Saban is royalty. Nick Saban is still royalty, even if you're not there, right? So he carries a certain amount of weight. His words definitely have meaning. I think you have to take it with a grain of salt. And I wish congressional hearings weren't like this. I wish it felt like congressional hearings just on the whole did a little bit more in this country. But I think we've come to know them now as more of a dog and pony show than anything else. So him being there, I think, is in a sense valuable. But on that same note, I tend to roll my eyes a little bit when I hear him talking as passionately as he does about an old power structure that benefited him greatly and benefited the likes of many other coaches greatly.
Yeah. I'm Saban neutral. I think he's got a lot to say, and I think he's very smart, but I'm a Yankee from non-SEC country. So I'll be told to sit this one out when it comes to Nick Saban by a lot of people. But it's not going to matter in the public perception war. This is going to come down to a lot of other factors more than just what people think. So I had somebody else explain to me, Ty, that they said, look, this whole thing is a proxy war between Fox and ESPN for control of the sport. ESPN with the SEC and Fox with the Big Ten. That's the game right there. Do you think there is some truth to that?
I think there's a lot of truth to that. And at the same time that many of the other conferences were signing on to endorse this bill that is making its way through Congress, or I guess not quite making its way through, but being discussed, the SEC and the Big Ten immediately came out with a statement in opposition, right? They are concerned that it does not go far enough. At least that's what they say, that it's not doing enough to override state laws, which are all over the place. It could potentially create more litigation instead of less, which obviously everyone wants less of that. They don't want to put as much power as they feel this puts in the hands of Congress. It could interfere with the House revenue sharing model. That there's a whole host of things here that they are pointing to specifically. But the one that I think really gets in their craw is the fact that a bill like this could give conferences the opportunity to pool media rights. And if you pool media rights, the SEC and the Big Ten as the two leading power structures in the sport now in 2026, they don't want that. Right. So in that sense, there is a bit of a proxy war going on, if only because the SEC and the Big Ten are the two big dogs in town and they don't necessarily want anything to sort of rain on that parade. I think on some level, that's what it comes down to. Some of the other points they raise may be valid, but I I try not to be too cynical. I do roll my eyes a little bit, though. You know, trying to read between the lines, I think a lot comes down to meteorites.
Then there's this talk of a Super League, which may or may not involve the Big Ten and the SEC joining forces, which may or may not be legal in antitrust terms. It depends on who you ask. The one part of the Super League, and I'd never thought about this until somebody brought the point up online, is the 2-10 factor. That when you create a Super League, when a team and a school has a bad year, they're going 2-10. And there's too many D1 power schools that would be part of this Super League that in no universe do they envision themselves going 2-10. A bad year is 7-7 for them, not 2-10. And that's going to be a real challenge. What do you think of the 2-10 factor?
Well, I think we're seeing it a little bit right now, granted to a much, much lesser degree with the college football playoff, because the standard has changed, right? The standard 10 years ago was you got to go 12-0, 11-1, dog.
Right.
If you don't, it's over. You're not playing for anything. But now, expanded playoff field. Now,
go 8-4 now.
Right, 8-4. Like, if you go 8-4, Greg Sankey had teams that were 9-3, 8-4, and he was arguing the merits of them getting into the playoffs. So the goalposts have shifted a little bit in that sense. They have not shifted to 2-10. And the issue that I think comes into play if you start talking about a 2-10 Super League, quote unquote, team, is to what extent are we actually going to make this like a Super League like they have for, say, the English Premier League over in England for international soccer or European soccer, right? If a team consistently goes or performs that poorly, is there any threat of relegation to kind of send them back out to the non-Super League, right? Those are the types of conversations that I think we would inevitably end up at. And I don't think anybody really wants that. Like, if you get admittance into this hypothetical Super League concept, I don't think you ever want to risk being booted out.
Oh, of course.
And so that's the issue that I see with it.
Right. But the point would be, let's say there's a Super League of the Big Ten, the SEC, and let's just say it's 32 teams or 32 schools like the NFL. In the NFL, when your quarterback gets hurt or whatever, you can go 2-whatever. And you're not going to have the cushion of playing a lot lesser schools at the bottom of your respective conferences if everyone is pushed into a Super League where everyone has a $40 million roster. So that's like something I was like, because, they said these boosters are not going to want to pay the money for really bad seasons, which are inevitable to happen when you concentrate 32 of the best, most powerful programs together to play each other only for a season.
And furthermore, we're still relatively new into this NIL era, this Wild West era that maybe this bill is trying to resolve some of. We don't know longer term how the big money boosters are going to feel about paying six figures for a backup lineman.
Right.
There's a chance that money's going to dry up totally separate from results. Because we just, I can't put myself in the mind of a billionaire. I have no idea for me what that return on investment would look like. But I'm not sure that the current system is sustainable just in the way that it has been over the last 2-3 seasons, because money is not limitless. And though some of it is probably based on production, as rosters continue to get more and more expensive, there is going to be more and more of a drain on the money men. How are they going to feel about that 5 years in the future before we get to a Super League, to me, is the bigger question right now.
I too, Ty, have said this is not sustainable. And then I see stories this week of a anonymous 4-generation Hokie family cutting a check for $75 million to Virginia Tech, the single largest donation in the university's history. Also, Jimmy and Dee Haslam, owners of the Browns and the Bucks, have cut a check for $130 million to their alma mater, the University of Tennessee. So the money is still out there for now, and it's crazy.
It is totally crazy, and I fear that without some better set of governance that college football has this weird way of tripping over itself every couple of years. It just so happens we've seen that happen a number of times over the last 5 years or so. I feel that without any kind of like hard and fast series of rules out there, this money thing will come to a head.
Yeah.
To your point, at some point, it is not sustainable. They do need to have a path forward that everybody can agree upon. We're just not there yet. And, you know, if this bill at a minimum gets the conversation started, then so be it. That's not, in my view, a bad thing, but I'm just not all that optimistic that this is really going to change much in the near term.
All right. One more thing on NIL, then I just have to put a quarter into the jukebox on the playoff schedule, which is out and it's not great. On the NIL front, what's existed so far has been communism, benevolent communism, where football and basketball pay for all the other non-revenue sports to have Division I competition and nice facilities and coaches and travel and everything else. What's wrong with basically having pseudo pro hoops and pro football and then club sports for swimming, track, golf, volleyball, etc., which has been painted as the doomsday scenario by guys like Saban and others? What's wrong with that? Is there an argument to be made of, well, this actually would make more sense? Or do you think that would be unacceptable to many universities?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, it also assumes that football is the top dog at a number of schools, you know, that that everybody wants that.
Sure.
You know, we've had conversations on our show in the past with people who are more steeped in administrative functions than Dan and I. And one topic that has repeatedly come up is that not all sports are created equal at every institution. And so there might be a college out there that values, I'll just say, like women's softball above something like a football. I don't know how practical that is, but just as an example.
There are some exceptions, yes. There are some schools that have a deep affection for certain women's programs.
Sure.
Like hockey programs are the number one dog in some of these schools, but yeah.
Yeah, and so I think, at least to that end, it would force some institutions to a really weird choice of having to pick football over, in this example, some sports that they are also passionate about and have recruited to and have built a following around. So it's a thorny thing. You know, there's no perfect solution for it. There are all sorts of considerations as well with regard to, you know, how sports are represented within an institution, be it public or private. It's thorny across the board. And unfortunately, there's just not a good solution out there that everyone's going to get behind, at least not now.
All right. The playoff schedule is out for this coming football season, and it is not great. It stretches on forever. Championship game is on January 25th. There's two huge 10 and 11 day gaps between rounds, one to accommodate the Christmas vacation, the other one to, I guess, get out of the way of the NFL. What are your thoughts at the Solid Verbal about this long road to a championship?
We hate it, Zabe. We hate it. We genuinely hate it. I mean, not to live too much in the past, but growing up in like the era of college football when I did, the culmination of everything college football is January 1st.
Right.
And gradually over the course of time, that has drifted and drifted and drifted to the point now where we're going to be 25 days into January when they kick off the 2027 National Championship in Vegas. This is the next big thing they need to address. I don't think they're going to solve the NIL thing with the stroke of a pen or a couple votes in Congress, but somebody can definitely come up with a better solution to this college football calendar. I don't know if that entails moving all of week one to week zero. I know there's some opposition to that. I could probably make as easy a case against as I could for, but they, at some point, they need to start pruning some of these long layovers out of the calendar, because we just don't need multiple 10, 11.
Yeah.
I'm looking at a 13 day gap between rounds of the college football playoff. I don't know who that serves. And furthermore,
television, television.
It, to an extent, yes, but it certainly does not serve the fan base.
Right.
And the deeper you go into January, the more you are, whether you're scheduling at the same time as the NFL or not, the more you are sort of playing footsies with an NFL playoff schedule, which overwhelmingly the U.S. cares a lot more about than what's going on in the college football playoffs. So I think the answer is less rest in between games. I think the answer is probably starting things a little bit earlier and finding a way to pull this thing back. I'm hoping that it comes to a bit of a breaking point, because January 25th is like,
it's absurd.
This season is just never going to end.
Yeah. Well, I know this, it's still going to be awesome. And I'm so looking forward to the season. I'm actually getting to see Neyland Stadium for the first time ever for a football game.
Oh, when are you
game.
Going?
Which I'm going, game? Going to the Auburn game.
Doing beautiful.
Doing a golf combo weekend there. That's going to be fantastic. And, you know, despite all of this current trouble and disruption, college football remains incredible. And I'm glad you guys still do the Solid Verbal podcast, the number one independent college football podcast. You and your colleague Dan Rubenstein get it wherever you get your podcasts. What do you guys talk about during the summer as the lead up to the season?
We make a lot of stuff up, to be honest with you, Dave.
Other than this stuff, what's the buzz going into the year?
Yeah. Well, we try to avoid this type of talk as much as we can, because people's eyes glaze over.
I know.
You know, this is the time of year where everyone has hope.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's got hope. We start looking at things like quarterback battles and quarterback situations and evaluating which teams have more to prove than others. We start looking at subjects, storylines that we think are going to be relevant come the fall. And we try to get out ahead of that stuff and give the audience something to sink their teeth into, give them an advanced look at the schedule to try and plan around, you know, whatever functions you might have in your family. Let's get some dates on the calendar so that you know what to plan around, and so that it's sort of, I don't know, etched in stone when you need to be in front of that TV, say on November the 7th for a loaded week 10.
We try
to inform as much as we entertain.
All right. Very good. We'll make sure to put you on the podcast listen list. As always, appreciate your time, Ty. And the season is coming. It'll be here shortly.
Thanks, Abe. Take care.
Coming up, the Madden curse is so real, sometimes it hurts. It's Sports Sunday here on The Fan.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radnor, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Bryan Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays. And now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
As Michael Scott once said, I'm not superstitious, but I am a little stitious. Welcome back. Sports Sunday here on The Fan. Steve Zabin with you. You can hit me on Twitter at Zabe, Charlie Zulu, Alpha, Bravo Echo. You can listen to my podcast, The Zabecast. Get it wherever you get your fine pods and make it part of your listening rotation. So, the Madden curse, you're familiar, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Basically says,
about, yeah, the guy that gets on the cover of the new Madden game always ends up
injured. Exactly. It is not 100%, but it's getting close to 90%. And I know you're going to say it's football, everyone gets hurt. Not to the extent that the Madden curse seems to be real. Now, Caleb Williams is on this year's cover of Madden. Caleb Williams is a nice player. He's still not that good, but he had his moment last year. Big win against the Packers. Comeback win. Highlight. Real. Miracle throw to beat him. Good for him. But you look at his actual numbers. He's not really worthy of being on the cover, but he's a very popular player. So they put him on the cover of Madden. What else is on the cover of Madden? It's a silhouette of the skyline of Chicago. Well, you know what happened this week? The Bears said formally, yep, we're leaving. We are officially now going to start putting in place the deal to move to Hammond, Indiana. Somebody tweeted, they put the skyline on the cover and the entirety of Chicago got hit with the worst Madden curse of all time. Yes. Yes. And if you're a Bears fan, and if you ever lived in Chicago and understand the way the vibe of that city and the vibe of the Chicagoland area works. And I know because I lived there briefly for about 2.5 years. It was not great. My time there, I still remember fondly. I was working for One-on-One Sports Radio in Northbrook, Illinois. It was a wonderful time in my life. I was young. I was in the process of being engaged to my lovely wife. And, you know, things were different. I got the energy of, like, being in a new city that I didn't understand. But, man, the winters were brutal. And how congested Chicago is brutal. And the toll roads everywhere are brutal. The cost of real estate, with all that wealth concentrated in a major city with a mercantile exchange right by a lake in which you can't build houses out on the lake. So all the building has to go over to this side, which means if you really want something affordable and you're young and you're raising a family, you're going way out there. Now Chicago has a bunch of other problems, which is not for this show, but I'm sure you're aware. They've now lost the Bears, basically. And they did it in a way that is just, it's mind-boggling, but then again, it's also predictable. You've got two inept and or corrupt entities, which is the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois. For reference, the state of Illinois is $143 billion upside down on pension obligations to their public sector unions. There's nothing they can do about that because these were promises made to union workers and public jobs that have to be fulfilled. But the way they've gone about chasing their tail, trying to get money, has led to this outcome. Now you might say, well, look, Hammond, Indiana is only 17 miles away from downtown Chicago and the current stadium, whereas Arlington Park, where they wanted to build, is a lot, is another 5-6 miles out. And you have to deal with more traffic on that side of town. Okay, fine. The problem is they're now going to be the Indiana Bears. This is also why the Chiefs got chased out of state and across the river. Because politicians get hung up with the, we can't subsidize billionaire NFL owners. And I do get it on a big picture, quick sketch on a napkin concept of, hey, pay for your own stadium. But nobody truly pays for every road, every fire hydrant, every light rail, every parking lot. There are certain infrastructure things that the communities benefit from and ought to be responsible for. So a city is going to be in for some chunk of a stadium. The Bears were willing to build and spend basically their own money on this stadium in Arlington Park, which is not Chicago, it's suburbs, but at least it's Illinois. At least it's Chicagoland. And here's what happened. They bought this chunk of land on the abandoned Arlington Park racetrack in 2021 for $197 million. Before they could even put a shovel in the ground, Cook County valued the now empty lot at even more money than the Bears paid for it. They said, that's worth $192 million. 192. Well, not more, but they valued it pretty much, you know, at $192 million. They were salivating Cook County at the chance to extort the Bears for a building that didn't even exist. They would make $54 million a year on taxes if the Bears built there. But now that the Bears are abandoning the property, they're going to make maybe four, if that. Talk about getting greedy and losing the whole bag. Downtown Chicago is not any better. Now, in Chicago's defense, there's nowhere really to put a good stadium because currently Soldier Field is hard up against the lake. There's no parking around there. Public transportation is sketchy at best, as well as it's just a mess down there. If you're going to a Bears game in Chicago, you know, plan to make a day of it and then some. But they've chased the Bears to Indiana, or so it seems, and Indiana didn't mind taking the Bears. They passed legislation in a month
They got $1 billion ready to go to give to them, and they're going to have the team. And it's, if you ever been to that part of Indiana, it's industrial. It's not picturesque, and it's not Chicago. I think Mike Greenberg put it best on his Twitter feed, ESPN's Mike Greenberg. He said, look, as a Jets fan, when your team moves out of your home stadium you've grown up with to somewhere else, like when the Jets moved to share the Meadowlands with the Giants, or the new Meadowlands, the new MetLife, he said, it's never quite the same. And he's right. It won't be quite the same. And those who hate the Bears are going to have a field day with photoshopped alt helmet decals, of which I've already seen one with a corn stalk and a big ear of corn right in the middle of that sea. The Indiana Bears. Billionaires and millionaires and politicians. Who would have thunk things would turn out not so great? It's Sports Sunday here on The Fan. You can hit me up on Twitter at Zabe, Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. Carl Anthony Towns is having his spotlight, and he's having a hell of a series. Can Wemby make some adjustments to combat him? We'll talk about it next. No hoops tonight. Sorry to say so. Travel gap, extra day in between. Game 3, Madison Square Garden, Monday night. And the line on the game is interesting. Because I'm looking back, the Knicks have not lost since April, which is nuts. They're on a 14-game heater that is truly unprecedented. Not only a 14-game run, but they are oftentimes blowing teams out. Now, they squeaked by the Spurs thanks to the Wemby folly on Friday night. But we're talking double-digit wins all up and down. I mean, look at these margins since they fell behind 2-1 to the Hawks. They then turned it on and beat the Hawks by 16, by 29, and by 51 to close out the series. They then beat the Sixers, beat their breaks off in 4, by 39, by 6, by 14, and then by 30 to send them fishing, as the boys on Inside the NBA would say. They beat the Cavaliers by 11, by 16, by 13, and then by 37. Then they beat the Spurs by 10 on the road in Game 1, and they survived Game 2 to come back to Madison Square Garden. They're the third team to win Games 1 and 2 of the NBA Finals on the road, and they head into Game 3 on Monday night on the second longest single-season win streak in NBA playoff history, and they've won 8 straight on the road. Karl Anthony Towns is also playing incredible basketball. And the more I hear from him and the more I listen to the way he talks, the more I like him a lot. Very intelligent, high IQ all around, not just basketball-wise, but life IQ. And having been through unbelievable tragedy with his mom passing away due to complications from COVID. Here he was, Karl Anthony Towns, on Van Pelt Center, talking about how he figured out a way through.
To be honest, to be vulnerable, I mean, when you go through something like that, I feel like other than losing a child, there's nothing worse you could go through. And it builds you up and it strengthens you beyond measure. That's why I got Philippians 4:13. And the date tattooed on my neck. I could do all things through Christ who strengthens me, but I was strengthened on April 13th when I lost my mother. That's been my favorite Bible verse my whole entire life since I was little. I didn't know the significance it would have in my life when I became an adult. But what I do know is that I truly can do anything when I walk in faith, when I walk with the angels beside me. I feel anything's possible. I feel nothing's impossible. The word grateful, again, I bring up all the time. I'm just grateful to be in this position because I know a lot of friends of mine that are not here to see this moment. I know a lot of people I love tremendously that aren't here to give me that hug or to give me that text message. So I'm doing this for them. I do this for them. I do it for my mother's country. I do it for everybody in Dominican Republic. I do it for everyone in the city that welcomed my mother when she immigrated over. I do it for all my family in New Jersey that allowed me to be raised and allowed me to love this game of basketball and allowed me to be a kid with my mother and enjoy those times. So there's a lot of people and amazing. It takes a tribe to get here, and it takes a village. And I'm so blessed that I've had the village I've had in my life to get to this point.
Beautiful words, beautiful perspective, and he is playing phenomenal basketball right now, headed towards being the series MVP. But they got to win it first, and I think we're all kind of getting a little bit ahead of ourselves because of the first two games in San Antonio. I believe the Spurs are going to represent in these two road games. They will not go quietly, unlike the Cavaliers, the Sixers, and the Hawks. Hour three on this Sports Sunday straight ahead. Steve Zabin with you right here on The Fan.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.